peninsula. I want to talk about residuated maps. It's a type of mathematics that I think might possibly be useful in the common development between quantum computation and quantum logic. And so what I plan to do is to tell you a little bit about the previous development in quantum logic, in particular how residuated maps came to be useful in the study of orthomodular lattices, and then talk about some work I've been doing more recently to calculate certain residuated mappings. I want to begin by talking about a theorem that Alex Wills ended with this morning. If you recall, Alex had some structure he called L, and it was defined in terms of perps, the X perps. And the theorem was that this was the logic, the logic obtained by identifying those events that have common complements. And so let me take a moment to remind you of the initial years of quantum logic, when quantum logics were all either Hilbert spaces, projections, or closed subspaces of a Hilbert space, or orthomodular lattices, or at the extreme, orthomodular posets. I think McLaren was the first to present the generalization of Hilbert space into the biorthogonals, so that you could take, what he took was the orthogonality relation in Hilbert space, X is perp to Y, that's a graph relation, in case their inner product was zero. And then he looked at all the subsets M and their perps, and then the perps of those sets, and those biorthogonals grouped together to give the closed subspaces. And then we generalized that to graphs. You had a Michigan graph, was symmetric and no loops. And you looked at biorthogonals, and then you put on conditions under which you got orthomodular lattices, then you discussed states, et cetera, and tried to do quantum logic. In the mid-60s, a fellow named James Dacey, that you may not have heard of because he preferred to teach in grammar school than a university, Dacey showed us how to make the construction so to get orthomodular posets. And it was simple. He said you don't take perps of all subsets. You take perps of orthogonal subsets of events. And when you did that, you got orthomodular posets. So, in a sense, the classification scheme was changed. It turned out that if the graph that you started with gave an orthomodular lattice when you did the biorthogonal construction that I started with, then Dacey's construction gave the same thing. And so, but he showed us how to define the classified sets in a way that was more general and admitted to admitted orthomodular posets, so we didn't have to continue to apologize for these are orthomodular lattices, except the joins don't really exist. In the early days, when Mackey wrote his book and suggested people study orthomodular posets, he didn't know any. He thought it might well be that they were all orthomodular lattices. Janowitz was the first to find the little square that we've seen a couple of times of an example of an OMP that's not an OML. Okay, so for years I've thought the classification scheme changed when we went from orthomodular lattices to orthomodular posets, and it changed again when we went from orthomodular posets to orthoalgebras, because the way you get the classified sets is not to take a biorthogonal construction of some sort. Instead, it's to look at perspectivity, to look at a test, and an event inside the test, and a complement, and a common, another element which had that same complement, and then you would identify these, put them in the same class. So you're classifying events, grouping them together, according to a scheme, which gives what Alex called the logic, and his theorem was that the perp construction was the same as the perspectivity construction. And so again, the classification scheme changed and gave a more general class. And I've always hoped to find a classification scheme that would give the effect algebras as nice a way. So when I was approached by Mel Janowitz to revisit some stuff that I did some 10 or 15 years ago, I was sort of forced back into this. And I thought, well, this might be a good talk to give to you guys. So let me remind you then what residuated mapping is. There's only one good book on residuation theory that I know, and I've put the Library of Congress number down here because you can't buy it. You might be able to get it at a library. The origins date back to Schmidt, Bernardo, and Nerbling. And last night, in a spastic moment, I crossed out Schmidt, thinking that, no, he didn't do that, and he just discussed filters. But I think, anyway. And Dubriel and Quassot are the ones that are mentioned most frequently in their contribution. And that all happened in the late 40s and mid 50s. And then not much happened, aside from some theorems in residuated ordered structures, ordered structures in which translations are residuated. But the object there was to do algebra, and it wasn't to study residuated maps, so I'm ignoring that. It remained dormant until the work of Derderian and Janowitz in the mid-60s, both of whom were students of Dave Fowler's, by the way. And so here is the definition of a residuated mapping. So the setting is that we have partially ordered sets P and Q. I'll use less than or equal to for both of them. And the mapping is isotone if it preserves ordering. X under Y implies F of X is under F of Y. Then such a map F from P to Q is residuated if there's a map G from Q to P going back. Such an F of X under Y is equivalent to X under G of Y. So if you replace the less than or equal to by an arrow and think categorically, it has to do with adjoint. This G, it turns out, you can easily show, has the property that G of Y is the largest element that F maps under Y, and hence it's completely determined by F, so we call it F plus. F is determined by G, and we call it G minus. We call G the residual of F, and really residuated maps, they come in pairs, FG. One is residuated, the other one is the residual map that makes it residuated. Okay. It turns out that the identity map is under F plus F That is to say, x is under f plus of f of x for all x, and f of f plus of x is under x, and you could use this box to define a residuated map, if there's a map having that property, or you could use this definition of residuated, which is my preferred way because you don't have to say that it's isotone to start with. So Q down, Q with a down arrow, means all the elements that are under Q. It's the principal ideal of all elements under Q. And the condition is that for all Q, there's a P, such that the inverse image of the principal ideal Q down is a principal ideal P down. And of course, that allows us to define the G or the F plus. F plus of Q is that P. So if you use this definition, you don't have to say that, you can deduce that it preserves order. So res PQ is going to be the set of all residuated maps from P to Q. Res P is res PP. And res P is a semigroup under composition. And the residuals behave this way. FG plus is G plus F plus whenever F and G are residuated. Okay, so that's sort of step one. There's an interesting observation that because of the defining condition, f of x under y is equivalent to x under g of y, if you flip the orders and say, look at the partially ordered set, which is the dual P star of P, that's P with the order bigger than or equal to instead of less than or equal to. That's a partially ordered set. And if you look at F, it just maps P to Q. You can say, well, what is it if you dualize it? It turns out that if F is residuated with residual Q, then when you dualize P and Q, F is residual, and it comes from the residuated map G. So residual and residuated just sort of depend on whether you're looking up or looking down. And we'll talk residuated, and for most of the talk, I won't repeat the dual statements. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Galois connections. They're probably much better known. If you have an order inverting map, and from P to Q, and another ordering inverting map from Q to P, and you go over and across and it gets bigger in both directions, then it's called the Galois connection. And it generalizes the Galois theory that sophisticated people learn as undergraduates. So a mapping F, a pair FG, if F is residuated and G is residual on the pair PQ, and you dualize just Q, then it becomes a Galois connection. So really, residuated maps and Galois connections are pretty much the same thing, except residuated maps have the property you can compose them and get another residuated map, but if you compose two order inverting maps, you don't get an order inverting map. So Galois connections have been focused upon under the guise of formal concept analysis, which came out of Darmstadt about 20 years ago, and is an important development in classification theory, because it helps to group. It's really, when you have a Galois connection, it's just like the perp construction that I started with, except, well, there's an F and a G. instead of a perp and a perp. A perp, it's an auto connection. But the mathematics is the same. You can think of it as the same set. And so formal concept analysis is a type of classification theory, grouping data together, generated by Galois connection. And the theorems are that the closed sets on one side are dually isomorphic to the closed sets on the other side, and things like that. And all of that, if you know any of that, is carried over almost verbatim into a discussion of residuated maps. Now, I mention that because Galois connections are mentioned much more frequently in my circles than residuated mappings. Okay. So here's an example. If you have complete lattices, L and M, then the residuated maps from L to M are the joint homomorphisms. So that'll give you a feeling for what residuated mappings are in a fairly familiar setting. So lattice mappings that preserve all joints are residuated on complete lattices. Here's an example that's not residuated. Take two chains, so just a linear structure twice, and pick an element here, send everything to it. Is it residuated? Well, no, unless you pick the bottom element. If there's a bottom element in P, there has to be a bottom element in Q in order for there to be any residuated maps, because zero, if it exists, always gets mapped to zero. So for everything I say for residuated, there's a dual statement for residual. Coming back, if Q has a one, then every residual map maps it to one. So, okay, that's one example of a function that's not residuated. If zero doesn't go to zero, it's not residuated, even on a chain, on anything. How about you take your favorite lattice, finite lattice, say, and send all the atoms and zero to zero. Everything else goes to itself. That's not residuated because it's not a join homomorphism. Two atoms get mapped to zero, and their join gets mapped to something else, but the join got mapped to itself. Okay, so there's just a couple of examples so that you can hold on to them. Here are a couple of other examples. If you take the power set of a non-empty set and pick for a subset M of X, let M prime be the set theoretic complement, and for any relation R in X, let R map the subset M of X. So R is going to induce a mapping that we'll call phi sub r from the power set to the power set by its image. So mr is just the image of M under R, all those y's such that there's something in M that gets mapped to y under R. M, y is in R. Okay, so phi sub r of M is mr. Then it turns out phi sub r is residuated, and the residual map is phi sub r inverse. R inverse, of course, is you just flip the relation R, all the yx's, where xy is in R. Phi sub r plus is phi sub r inverse, phi sub r plus of m is phi sub r inverse of m prime prime. Turns out. Okay. Here's an interesting result that any map that preserves order, when I put a less than or equal to over the arrow, I mean it's isotope. a phi is residuated, mapping the power set of X to the power set of X, if and only if it preserves all joins, if and only if it's of the form phi sub R, where R is some relation on X. Okay. So that's sort of the classical example. And the Hilbert space example might be if you replace the power set of X by all the closed subspaces of a Hilbert space, you take a bounded operator T with adjoint T star, define phi sub T of a closed subspace M to be its image, and that might not be closed, close it up. So T of M closure, then you get a residuated mapping, and phi sub T plus of M is phi sub T star of M perp perp. I hope you can remember the last formula where it was phi sub R inverse of M prime all prime. So it's similar. And there's an amusing little formula that you can recapture phi star from phi plus by phi star of M is phi sub T star of M is phi, and it really is phi sub T star. Phi sub T star is phi sub, never mind, that's coming, sorry. Phi sub T star, corresponding to the operator T star of M, is phi sub T plus of M perp all perp. All right, some observations. Not all residuated maps on L bar of H come up this way. And if S is a multiple of T, alpha S equals T, then phi sub S equals phi sub T, and conversely. So the residuated maps on L bar of H mirror in this way the bounded operators up to multiplication cascades. Okay. Now, because I detected an inordinate propensity for finite dimensional Hilbert spaces at this conference, I thought that I would mention this special type of mapping called range closed, because the phi sub t's on a finite dimensional Hilbert space are range closed. So here's the definition. It says that if you take something Q1 under an image point F of P, there's something P1 that maps to it. F of P1 is Q1. If you have a bounded lattice and F residuated, these are equivalent. F is range closed. The condition just says that the image is an order ideal, closed under subelements. If and only if any of these conditions hold, when viewed as a mapping to its image, it's surjective. FF plus of Y, which is always under Y meet F of 1, is equal to Y meet F of 1. And this condition that essentially says F plus restricted to 0 F of 1, it's coming back, is injective. Okay, I'm not going to do much with that. I want to mention that phi sub t, the one that mapped M to T of M closure, is range closed exactly when the range of the operator T is closed. And that's why, in finite dimensions, when the range of all the operators are closed, all of the phi sub t's are range closed. Okay, whoops. Let's see, did I define Sasaki projection? No. There are special mappings on an orthomodular lattice. Let me just wait, come back to that line. First I want, okay, so what I want to do now is to show you what happens when the poset is an involution poset. So it might be that there's a prime mapping on P, making it an involution poset. And I asked for a table so I wouldn't get confused. Ah, I see. Here's the definition of an involution poset. So there's a unary map, and x prime prime is x, and it flips the order, just as I think you all have experience with that. A star semigroup is a semigroup that has a star, a unary mapping, that behaves like adjoint in this way, x star star is x, and x y star is y star x star. Okay, as long as we're this close, let's define an ortho poset as an involution poset in which the meet of x and x prime is zero. Every element is sharp. And therefore, x joint x prime is one. An ortho lattice is just an ortho poset in which the meet and join of any two elements exists. An orthomodular lattice is just an ortholattice in which the orthomodular identity holds y is x joint, y meet x prime, when x is under y. And here's the definition of a Sasaki projection. On an ortholattice, fixing x, you can define a mapping phi sub x at y. It is y joint x prime meet x. These mappings play an important role in what we have to say. This phi sub x is residuated, and phi sub x plus is given by this formula, phi sub x y prime of y prime all prime. So the important thing is just to recall these Sasaki mappings are residuated. All the logicians know that. Okay, so now I can put up the theorem that had to do with No, I want to do this first. If you have a bounded involution poset P with prime and an F that's residuated. Remember, residuated doesn't have anything to do with anything but the ordering. Then if you define F star this way, F star of x, you use the residual mapping F plus of x prime all prime, then you get another residuated mapping. This makes all residuated mappings on the involution poset a star semigroup. It's an involution semigroup. Star is the, this star is the natural involution. Okay, now if F maps P to P is isotone, it's residuated if and only if there's a mapping star that behaves in this way. Now, this condition is the abstract version of the orthogonality content of the definition of the adjoint for linear operators. The inner product of ax with y equals the inner product of x with a star y. Now, if you translate that into if the first is zero, then the second is zero, and vice versa, you get these two equations where the E is a subspace, the prime means perp, and the F is, say, that phi sub t that I talked about. So this is the content of adjoint linear transformation. You can do a lot without it, and that's one of the reasons I came this route. to mention it because I think it might be of interest here. Okay, so F is residuated if and only if it's associated with another residuated mapping, with a mapping that turns out to be residuated that's isotone having these two properties. And then there are some technical facts, one of which is that GF is zero if and only if F of one is orthogonal to G star of one. And I don't want to belabor that. Okay, now I can put up this theorem I've been wanting to put up. For an involution, bounded involution poset, all residuated mappings is a star semigroup under this definition of star, F plus of X prime all prime. So F star is again residuated. And then I repeated that equation because I like it so much. And now here's a lemma. It just says that if you have two residuated mappings, F and F prime, and F prime is a projection, it's self-adjoint equal to its star and idempotent equal to its square. And if it satisfies this relationship, the annihilation GF equals zero is equivalent to G equals GF prime, then you can deduce this. Let's consider that a technical condition and not belabor it. And this leads us to a theorem of De Foulis's that said if you have an orthomodular lattice, then you take a residuated map F and you define F prime to be the Sasaki projection phi sub X, then it has the right property so that the, and I wrote it this way, the left annihilating ideal of F is principal generated by this projection F prime that has the properties in the box. And Dave then generalized this to what he called bare star semigroups, and people now call Foulis star semigroups. And there's a whole very rich theory, some of which I had hoped to mention because I thought you were going to talk about it in your talk, but you changed the talk. Anyway, a corollary is that if you have an ortho lattice, it's an orthomodular lattice if and only if this resL is a bare star semigroup. And I didn't bother writing down a technical condition. It just says annihilating ideals of principle generated by projections. Okay. Now, that's orthomodular lattices. Foulis's work was generalized by Mel Janowitz just a few years later, in which he proved that for any bounded lattice, you could represent it, it's isomorphic to the lattice of all right annihilators in a bare semigroup, namely all residuated maps on L. So the residuated maps on L provide a coordinatization, which is an algebraic way of discussing the ordered set. And it has a very different flavor. Okay, I think I don't want to get into the details. A bare semigroup, right annihilating ideals are principal generated not by self-adjoint idempotents, because there is no star, because there's no prime, but generated by idempotents. Okay, so that's sort of the quick run-through of the theory. Now, I want to say a little bit about what happens when you have a map that is not residuated. So part two, the bad news is that not all maps are residuated. Good news is that you can sometimes approximate the map by a residuated map. And the theorem is that isotone maps can be approximated by residuated maps. And before I put in this assumption that will stand that everything's a complete lattice, Let me talk you through the approximation. You don't need completeness. All you need is a zero to get the existence of one residuated map. But if you have an isotone map, there's at least one residuated map under it, the zero map. You're in a bounded setting. And it turns out that the supremum of residuated maps is residuated. And so if you look at the class of residuated maps under a given one, the supremum is under it, and the supremum is residuated. So there is a largest residuated map under any isotone map. The question is, what is it? And that's this rho sub f. And I drew this, and I was going to talk about a duality, but I don't think I will. A few years ago, I, along with George Strecker and Andreka, H. Andreka, created for complete lattices this thing we call the shadow. And given an isotone F, the shadow of F was given by this formula. F goes from P to Q, and the shadow of F goes from P to Q, and it's the meat of all the Qs at X. It's the meat of all Qs such that X is under the join of F inverse of down Q. Okay, I don't want to tell you why I think it's a pretty formula, because I don't have time, but let me just point out, let sigma be the shadow of F, that F is always above sigma, and sigma is always above rho, which is the residuated approximation, the soup of all the residuated maps under F. And then we proved back in 88 that if Q is completely distributive, then sigma is always residuated, and that means that the shadow equals this largest residuated map under it. And we also proved that Q is completely distributive if and only if, for every complete P and every isotone mapping from P into Q, the shadow was residuated. So it allowed us to write a paper whose last line was, which complete lattices are completely distributive? The shadow knows. Okay. Janowitz, who's now the president of the Classification Society of America, got interested in this result. And he asked me so many questions about it that I finally started thinking about it again, and we started playing with it. And I just want to end by mentioning just a couple of things that if you define for an isotone F from P to Q, F plus coming back from Q to P with parentheses in it, so it's like a quasi-residual map. It's not necessarily residual. It's the soup of the P such that F of P is under Q. That was one of the expressions that appeared in the shadow. And then the dual expression, F minus, where you change bigger, less than or equal to bigger than or equal to. Then it turns out that if you have an F and you hit it with parentheses plus, then with parentheses minus, you get the shadow. And that was an observation. But this little result made us think it might be important. Turned out that if K was residuated under F, remember, we're trying to determine the largest residuated map under F, that was equivalent to this quasi-residual being under the residual K plus. And you can get the... Okay. Let's just jump down to the theorem in the box. It says that something like the one I told you that Strecker and Drake and I had done a few years ago, Q is, the shadow knows when Q is completely distributive. It turns out that P is completely distributive if and only if F plus that we defined is residual, which was completely unexpected and made us think that there was something hidden here that's a lot more than what we thought we would get when we started this investigation. So if you have a finite distributed, if you have a finite lattice P, it's distributive if and only if for all Q, every isotone into Q has a quasi-residual, which is residual. Okay? And this is my last slide. How about this one? So F is residuated if and only if it equals F circle plus circle minus. And now, since the shadow, which I'm now calling FS, is under F and above the residuated approximation of F, if you do it again, turns out it goes down a little more and a little more. So if it's a finite setting, you iterate it, eventually you hit the residuated approximation. So we have a way now of calculating, without calculating all of the residuated maps under F, we can calculate the residuated approximation for the finite setting. Okay, so let me end simply by saying that my hope is that all this is going to lead to a classification scheme that is going to help quantum logicians and perhaps quantum information theorists to understand what they do better. Thank you. Howard. Yeah. 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 Gee, I don't remember what's residuated in. I think the answer is yes. And I forget. Maybe I just don't know. Let me think about that and get back to you. I haven't thought about that lattice in a while. Something that has survived? I don't want to say yes, and I'm afraid to say no. So somebody asked me something I can answer. Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember the residuation content of that. It was a construction where he more or less pushed out the operator theory in an abstract setting. And I don't remember the residuation. Was there residuation? No, I don't think so. No.